Welcome to Couch Buddies. I'm Kia.
I'm Michelle.
And today we're taking a little blast to our past, like the years of our adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the movie Summer Catch.
Summer Catch was made in 2001. It stars Freddie Prinze Jr., Jessica Biel, Matthew Lillard, Brittany Murphy, Fred Ward, Mark Blucas, Wilmer Valderrama, Brian Dennehy, Christian Kane, which I've mentioned for us, and then uncredited John C. McGinley.
And also Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh, yep. And Beverly D'Angelo.
Yes.
So that's a lot of people in a movie.
So I had forgotten how many people were in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it just kept on coming.
I could have kept writing, but I was like, no, right. I'm now writing onto the side of the page. So.
Yeah.
It has an 8% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's right. I said 8%. And a 4.9 out of 10 on IMDb.
I love it. Oh, man.
That's right.
I had forgotten so many things about this movie when I suggested we watch it. I remembered... Like, or how I remembered this movie in my head, there was a lot more love story and less baseball, and the complete opposite is true.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear your thoughts, because when I walked in the house, you had views.
I have views, and I will happily share those views when we get to talking about the movie, but for the synopsis.
Yes, the synopsis. A rich girl whose family summers in Cape Cod has a romance with a local poor boy who hopes to become a major league baseball player.
This movie would do better if they ditched the poor-rich dichotomy.
Yes.
And focus more on the baseball. Like that sounds horrible. But, like, the moments I got excited during this movie were the good baseball plays. Like, the Christian Kane flip out to the side. And
oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's a good catch.
There were a couple of, like, double plays in this movie that I was just like, yes!
Also, full disclosure, I'm not a super big sports fan. But... when the last College World Series is being played, I'm not going to tell you that the Kia and I did not sit on this couch and watch part of it.
We absolutely did.
We finished recording one night and turned on a game that happened to be on because the Arkansas Razorbacks, which were from Arkansas, had made it. They made it to the finals.
Yes,
and through a stupid, dumb mistake that I won't rant about it because I've done that before and I just get strange looks from people. I get really strange looks from people and I don't understand it.
We had opinions.
Okay, so I get, this is just off topic, but it's funny. I get weird looks when I rant about sports, but I get weird looks when I rant about science fiction. What am I allowed to rant about?
Nothing.
That's stupid. Anyway.
You're a woman. You're not supposed to have opinions.
I don't think my father-in-law feels that way, because I've met my mother-in-law. He just literally had no, like, he was mystified, because he had said, oh yeah, I watched the game, and so I went into, like, this whole spiel, and he gave me this look like, oh, I didn't know any of that mattered. It's really weird, and it's just, sorry, it was a random off thing about fandom, but I just find it really funny.
No, I'm right there with you.
There's a lot of people, like, a lot of people will say it's okay to do it, to have it with sports, but, like, there's nobody, like, I get funny looks no matter what I rant about. So it's like, well, I'm not going to care what I do then. You can just deal with it. But anyway, so back to the movie. So yeah, I'm not the biggest baseball fan, but I've actually, oddly enough, the year this movie came out, I started playing softball the next year, that next semester in high school.
I played softball as a kid. Like, I played softball from the time I was five. Like, I never did, like, t-ball or anything like that. It was just straight into, like, playing softball. It was just, like, for, you know, really little kids. I played softball from the time I was five until I was in ninth grade.
Which is when I started.
Yeah. And so, you know, like, we went to... We went to Cardinals baseball games because my dad worked for a subsidiary of Anheuser-Busch. And so we'd go to Cardinals games occasionally. And I loved baseball. Like, my parents were more like, they were a little bit more football people.
Yeah.
And
my family too.
And I was a cheerleader for a basketball team. So, you know, like, like, I had sports in, you know.
While we are not sports huge fans, we are very well acquainted with sports. So as we do sports movies and stuff, we do actually know mostly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We freely admit when we don't. But right. I'd say all of that to set the preface.
Yeah.
That there are things in this movie that made me mad on the baseball front. In a lot of ways.
I wasn't.
And I understand that the world has changed a bit since this movie came out, because I did some research.
Right.
And so I understand certain things, like the end of the movie. We'll get to it when we get to the end of the movie.
Okay.
But the thing that happens at the end of the movie made me really angry. Actually, several different. The walking away.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Really, that's only a movie thing.
It made me really actually angry. And then there's a couple of other little things that,
yeah.
that was interesting to me that we'll get to when we get through it. But yeah, like. There's a lot in this movie that is not good. A lot.
It's so not good.
But I will tell you this. It gets a slight bump for me because Matthew Lillard and Freddie Prinze Jr. make my heart happy.
They have... And I don't necessarily feel that way about the Scooby-Doo movies that they're in.
See, I love those.
No. What I'm trying to say is, like, they have an amazing chemistry.
Yeah.
I don't so much feel that in a Scooby-Doo because they're playing very stylized, recognizable roles.
Yeah.
In this movie, they're just them.
I will say there are moments in the Scooby-Doo movies I think you can really feel it.
Right.
But yeah, I see what you're saying.
But I haven't watched those in like at least 10 years.
It's probably been more recent for me because I actually really find them hilarious. I think I own them on DVD.
Well,
the first one.
Right.
Like, I don't like the second one
very much, but. My senior year, we took a band and choir trip down to Florida on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had like three movies that we watched over and over and over. The Scooby-Doo movies were two of them. Tuck Everlasting was the other.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Talk about a downer.
Yeah. So I got kind of burned out on Scooby-Doo. But like, I had not... There's a thing that I love about sports movies, and that is like team camaraderie.
Yes.
Like, I love that so much. And I think it's because it's a subset of found family that you and I love so much.
Probably.
And so, like, my favorite sports movie of all time, and it was voted best sports movie of all time by the We Got This podcast, A League of Their Own,
yeah.
which is a baseball movie.
One of the greatest movies ever.
And,
absolutely.
You know, and like that whole team, like, they become family. You know, there are other, you know, like plenty of other sports movies. Like, I feel the same way, like Varsity Blues. It's a football movie, but like that team is a family.
Yeah.
And it's also like some of the best team camaraderie. Like, they go to a strip club together. But I, like I said, that was the thing I had forgotten about this movie is like how much I love like the team camaraderie of it all.
Yeah.
Like, everybody is like, They're just all in it together, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, let me go back to some of the people who are in it for just a second. Because
mm-hmm.
Mark Blucas in this movie,
mm-hmm.
this was like right after he played Riley.
Yeah.
Like this is Buffy era Mark Blucas.
Yes.
So it's very strange. Like, but he fits with Matthew Lillard and with Freddie Prinze Jr. so well.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. I wish we had had more of that friendship because that doesn't happen very much. And when it does happen, they start making fun of him for something. Which is a plot line that should have been cut from this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
That one and the Wilmer Valderrama subplot. I loved those characters. It would have been far more interesting to do something else with them.
Yes, absolutely.
At the beginning, I thought it was going to come out by the end that Blucas was gay.
And that would
have been an interesting, how do we deal with that on a team?
Going into it, I remembered there was something about him that he was kind of like, quote unquote, like ashamed of. Was how I remembered it. Like, there was something that they teased him for.
Yeah, he gets shamed for it.
Yeah, there was something that I remembered them teasing them for. And like, there's a moment in the bar where he comments on, like, somebody having a bubble butt. And he's like, what? I'm an outfielder. I look at backsides all day. You know?
And then he says Freddie Prinze Jr. has a nice one. And yeah, he does.
It's true. And so it led me to believe, oh, maybe it's that he's gay. And so, like, that's what I was thinking. No, he likes plus-size women.
Yeah, he likes full-figured women. And, okay, it wouldn't bother me so much if, this is going to sound really weird, but if we saw any of the personalities of the people he's with,
yes,
I would be much less bothered. Right. But all we do is see them from afar.
Yes.
Or in one weird scene where he's reading a poem he wrote to her.
Yes.
That's super weird. And, like, I don't know, he never actually seems that ashamed of it to me. He's just tired of being teased about it.
Yeah.
And, like, in the Wilma Valderrama plot revolves around the fact that he is a virgin. And we think he's a virgin. He never says that outright, but
it's implied. It's
widely implied. His house mom, quote-unquote, basically wants to bang him. Like, she sleeps with all the baseball players because Christian Kane runs in at one point to get his clothes. That part made me happy.
I remembered that. I did not remember that it was Christian Kane, and so I was doubled over laughing.
Yeah. Because we love, I will mention that we love Christian Kane. That's one of the reasons that I was like, he has to be mentioned, even though he doesn't play a huge role. He's just kind of annoying guy number two, sidekick and to annoying guy number one.
We have sort of like a little Sarah Michelle Gellar solar system happening here.
Yeah, that's true.
because Matthew Lillard, you know, like from the Scooby-Doo movies, Freddie Prinze Jr., also Scooby-Doo.
Also her husband.
Also her husband. And also I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
Mark Lucas because of Buffy, Christian Kane because of Angel.
Yeah. So like there's a weird, yeah. I forgot about the Angel thing.
Yeah.
The Mark Lucas Christian Kane thing's even funnier now. Like I had forgotten that he had been on Angel by that point, because Angel would have been on for a season.
Yep.
So he did like the beginning and then went and did this and then came back and had his hand chopped off. Spoilers for Angel. He gets it back. But yeah, like, I don't know, there's something about the camaraderie aspect that I wish had been more played up. What I really wanted, this is going to sound really weird, I actually wanted his character to get a redemption moment. Because he actually pulls the other pitcher, I can't remember his name, it's a weird name.
Van Lemer.
Yeah, Lemer, like a monkey, yeah. So he pulls Van Lemer back several times and, like, has him back off of Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character, Ryan. And so I was hoping, like, at some point he was going to get, like, this little redemptive arc.
Yeah.
But no. He has to just get disappeared from the movie when Van Lemer gets disappeared from the movie.
Right.
Which, I mean, granted what they did, yeah. They broke into a place and then burned it down by accident.
Yeah, they set the press box on fire inadvertently.
And see, I would have cut that shit out, too. I wouldn't have had that in there. I would have had Van Lemer got hurt.
Yeah.
Which may seem more tropey, but this movie's full of enough platitudes and tropes that it wouldn't have been out of place.
I was thinking about it. This feels like four different movies.
I can see that.
In places, like, the class divide feels almost like a different movie. Yeah. The class divide, the romance, and the baseball stuff. The hometown friends versus the new friends. Like, there are so many different dynamics in this movie. Like, oh, and then also, like, all of the stuff with the parents.
Yeah.
Like, there's enough for, like, an entire, like, Lifetime movie just on the bullshit, like, with Ryan's backstory, like, tragic backstory of his mom dying.
That's the other thing I was going to say that I found really... Like, there are two things that I felt like were really lacking in this movie. Mm-hmm. We get told that he has a bad temper.
Yeah.
He acts like any other pitcher I've ever seen who's getting bad calls from an umpire.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw the quote-unquote temper that he supposedly has on display. Right. Like, to me, that was weird.
He's not the John McEnroe of baseball.
Well, because he got kicked out of community college for punching someone. Why did he punch that person? Because he had to have a reason. And we never get that. And so to me, that's like a dangling, like... a dangling thing there. I'm like, why? Because, like, I was hoping it'd be, but, like, I get that he was, like, acting out after his mom died. That's where it was coming from.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
But, like, he's supposedly still acting out about his mom dying, but it's not never really. I mean, he's acting like a college kid. He had sex on the baseball field the night before the first practice, shows up late in a pair of thongs. I mean, that big deal, like... I know that sounds horrible, but big deal. Also, I like Brittany Murphy, but she. I would have liked. This is gonna sound weird. It would have been more interesting for me to have explored her relationship with Matthew Lillard's character more. Like, to have that actually, like.
Literally, the only point for her to be in this movie is so that later, like, she can keep Matthew Lillard on the team.
Yeah, so she can keep Matthew Lillard busy.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
Right. And, but for that, I don't, because it's not revealed until that moment that she's Augie's sister.
Yeah.
So, like, to me, like, other than to show, like, these are just some of, like, the antics that she pulls, like, there, to me, like, there's no point in having her at the very beginning. We could have just, like, there could have been mention of her. Like, we could have avoided all of this stuff on, like, the actual baseball field and just had, like, her, like, coming up to Ryan in the bar. And like, it could have been done with a few lines of dialogue.
Yeah. It just didn't, there's a lot that just doesn't fly in this movie.
I know! Like,
and granted, part of it is it was made in 2001 when a different, and some of the stuff that probably people really like is not my brand of comedy. Like, the underwear joke doesn't sink for me. Like,
I don't mind it.
I don't mind it. It just doesn't do much for me at the first time. Or after the first time. The first time it was kind of funny because she took his clothes.
Weirdly, I don't find it as funny the first time. I find it funnier the second. Lillard. Yeah, I find it funnier when it's Matthew Lillard.
It's Matthew Lillard, so. But, like, I don't know, there's just something about it that, but, like, what I mean is more like the part where she asks for him back and he's like, I'm still wearing him. No, that's dumb. That's just, like,
yeah,
that's dumb. Like, why? Number one, he wouldn't admit that in the situation he was in. I don't think he would admit that.
Yeah.
And, like, it just seemed weird. I don't know. It just didn't, like, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't land. I think, like, we haven't started talking about the actual movie yet. I think Jessica Biel's character is completely boring.
I feel exactly the same way.
I was so bored.
And
I literally said in here somewhere, what did she do? Get all of her platitudes from a Hallmark card? Because, like, everything she said is a platitude. There's nothing. There's poor little rich girl
and platitude. There's very little actual, like, substance to Tanley and Ryan's
relationship. Yeah. It's just like
you're right. It's one platitude after another.
It frustrates me because, like, it would have been more, once again, more interesting. This is, like, what I was looking at with this movie was how could I make it better? Like, at the end of it, I literally thought, how could I make this better? I didn't like the way that he was in his head. Like,
mm-hmm.
I understand where they were going with that. Mm-hmm. Once again, just, I didn't feel landed exactly right.
Mm-mm.
Like, it was really confusing at times. And I would have liked to have seen him actually, like, struggling with it and, like, trying to figure it out. Rather than just, like, magically at the last game, it all clicked. And his coach does say that early on.
I'm a little more lenient on that. Not based on necessarily the speeches coach gives in.
Not necessarily all clicking, but it just, I'm trying to figure out how to say it. It felt like the way he talked about it and the way we were supposed to, as the audience, view it, honestly, I wasn't sure if he just wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we see in the show doesn't, we get what they tell us. They tell us, oh, his temper is in the best room and he's self-sabotaging. But it's really hard to show that in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel that a great job with it. Like, I get where they were coming from. But speaking as someone who, once again, like we talked about, we'd watched the College World Series.
Mm-hmm.
He made it to the seventh inning without a strike in one game, or all strikes in one game. Mm-hmm. That's not bad.
No, it's
for not. His arm to give out at that moment, especially because he is still in training, is not bad. So for him to be all like, oh, and I did look it up because the pitching for the whole game, mm-hmm. not pitching for the whole game, rather, is a much newer thing in baseball. And I didn't know that because I didn't start watching baseball until I was already mm-hmm. married. But it just doesn't make sense to me. If you're like, yeah, okay, it's the seventh inning. He is just a college, like he's just in his early 20s. So mm-hmm. his body is still training for this.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that his arm would give out at leg seven.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's nothing wrong with that. So it was just weird to me, like, every little thing he did was all of a sudden really bad. And I'm like, it's not really bad. You just need to get, you need to keep practicing.
Yeah, it's, the thing that this movie tries to do is that, one, it, the ways that it tells us that Ryan is too in his head is that, one, hold on, I'm trying to,
when he's on the pitcher's mound, he gets those. They do those weird voiceover spots.
Yeah, it is weird.
Because like we've seen all these things being said, so we don't really need to hear them again as the audience.
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to think. I didn't completely get it out of my notes, but basically, it's like what we're told at the very beginning. It's like, this is his dream, like, going on to play professional ball, like, that is his dream. That is the thing that he wants. But what this movie, this entire movie is about, like, setting up roadblocks that don't really make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
Because we, like, the roadblock of, his dad being, like, a shitty drunk. His...
Yeah, I know. Doesn't come very well.
So he has a bad relationship with his dad. He has I can't think of the word, like a sparring relationship.
Tempestuous.
He has not necessarily like a rocky relationship with his brother, but like sparring is the only word that I can think of. It's like a relationship with his brother. He's known as everybody just calls him the lawn boy. And so he thinks of himself as a lower class and doesn't think that he has what it takes to be able to pull himself up from this lower class into something that into a greater position.
Yeah.
Comparing himself to, he's just a local Chatham boy, going up against all of these fancy college kids.
Yeah.
And, so then the dichotomy between him and Van Lemer, who is basically, the college baseball equivalent of a Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
Which that's such a dated reference.
That's a really dated reference.
Yeah. But...
I would say LeBron, but I think that's a disservice to LeBron.
He's
a very, cocky, mouthy kid who is actually in trouble, which is why he's here.
Yeah.
He's got some problems going on, and he's trying to get the best, essentially the best bang for his buck. He's playing for scouts at this point.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about the actual Chatham team.
No, he doesn't. Van Lemer doesn't.
But, yeah, so here's the other thing. The movie opens with a voiceover.
The fact that it opens with multiple voiceovers,
but I'm fine
is
with that.
Weird.
What my biggest problem with that is it doesn't end with one. You can't.
I had forgotten that.
You can't open with a voiceover telling us that something's going to happen this summer, and then not tell us, and that's the summer I followed my dream, or I learned. At least give me I followed my heart instead of my dream,
or at least if nothing else,
give us an epilogue voiceover,
An epilogue voiceover, or if nothing else, give us a freaking title card, to tell us and then Ryan and Tenley, blah blah blah. Something.
Well, but I was thinking, because it has Lillard, Valderrama, Freddie Prinze. I think that's the only three that have voiceovers at the beginning.
That sounds right. I think so. I want to say that Luke... No, I think Lucas...
He may have one, too.
No, I think it's just... I think he and Matthew Lillard are getting out of the same van.
They are.
And so that's why I think he has one, too. But yeah. No, it's just...
Just those three. So, okay, number one, Valderrama. No offense to Wilmer Valderrama. I like Wilmer. His point in this movie is pointless. He doesn't need anything in this movie. He doesn't need he definitely didn't need a voiceover part there. Because all he did was tell us exactly what we were going to see for the next rest of the movie with him. Talking about his house parent. But,
yeah.
The other two could have easily closed out. It's like, I finished at USC. And then I joined him up on the Mud Dogs or whatever. Something like that would have been great. Also... Billy is Lillard's character.
Billy Brubaker.
Billy can't hit with a wooden bat. Can we see some practice?
Let's
have a montage of Freddie Prinze Jr. helping him.
In my mind, I thought that there was one because I remembered him having trouble.
No, because that would make sense.
Because I remembered him having trouble with the wooden bats. In my mind, I had created a montage of them helping him with working with the wooden bats. It doesn't exist.
No, he never works with the wooden bats. He just keeps getting more mad that he's missing. But we never see him trying to get better. All we see him doing is getting drunk and having sex. That's it.
Yeah.
That's my other big frustration with this movie is it would have done us good character development wise to show something from practice besides stretching. All we really see in baseball practice is the guys stretching.
Some stretching and a little bit of pitching practice.
That's because our main character is a pitcher, so I get that. But it never shows us, how all of a sudden Matthew Lillard was able, like, was having sex with Brittany Murphy's character Dee Dee, mm-hmm. and just the only way he would be ever able to hit with that wooden bat, because that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And granted, part of that could be he was in his own head, so now he's relaxed and unwound. But it never gives us that. It just goes, hey, now he can hit.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. But yeah, like, I don't know. There are certain things I just didn't get.
Yeah.
and it felt like they were trying to go somewhere with it, and then they just were like, oh, actually, it's more fun to just do this.
Yeah.
Let's go focus on this love story that doesn't matter.
It doesn't. And I have to say, you were talking about Tenley just being super boring, and
I actually literally have written down that all she says is platitudes.
Yeah, like,
I have
some of them written Tenley, down. Tenley, like, she might as well be a cardboard cutout.
The most interesting thing about Tenley is Katie.
Yes.
The sister. I love the little sister.
Yeah.
She could have taken Tenley's place in this movie without the love story. Get rid of the love story, but have her become friends with the baseball team. I'm on board with this.
Yeah.
Because, number one, the fact that she's a kid and her parents have no idea what she's doing all day is hysterical to me.
Oh, I know.
But, yeah, and granted, that's the kind of parents that they are.
That's the kind of parents they are, and this was also, like, a pre-9/11 world.
Yes,
and true. So, you know, this was still a time, like, when parents would, you know, just about send their kids out at, you know, in the morning and just tell them come back at dark.
It's just, she's so obsessed with the team that I wish we had more time with her.
Oh, I know.
Because it would have been way more fun.
Yeah, because Katie's what, probably, like, 10?
Like, let's flip this bitch and turn into angels in the outfield. Like, I'm on board with that. Like, let's get the kid involved and make, like, have her give Billy the tip that lets him hit the ball. That'd been awesome.
Something like that. But no, Katie is the only thing, like, Katie cares about baseball, and Katie is more knowledgeable about baseball than anybody else in her family. She reminds me of Hayden Panettiere's character in Remember the Titans.
Oh, great movie. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, like, her little, like, subplot through the movie, she's trying to find a mascot for the Chathamays.
Yeah.
And that's fun. Like I have the lobster thing written down, which made me think about it. But yeah, for me, that's the most interesting thing about Tenley is the sister.
Right.
That's the least stereotypical thing about her.
I was being a little bit unkind when I was watching, because I was thinking back to Jessica Biel. Like, I think she has gotten leaps and bounds better, but, like, her first real, like, foray into acting was Seventh Heaven.
Yeah.
And she's not good on that show because nobody is good on that show.
Sorry, Seventh Heaven fans, you heard it here.
You can bite me, I don't care. No, because I watched it. Like, I watched it when I was a kid.
I know.
And it wasn't until I got, you know, like, I went to college, and, like, I remember coming home on a break, and this is when, like, they had started running it on what was ABC Family at the time.
Uh-huh.
They had started, like, running it in syndication there. And I think it might have been when I was working in the factory. And, like, I remember coming home, and, like, it was on, and I was like, oh, I have fond memories of watching this. And turned it on and just was like, oh my God.
There are very few shows.
Bad.
There's very few shows from our childhood that we should go back and watch. Because I tried, there's a couple that I've gone back and gone, oh, yeah, what was I thinking?
It's not, like, the concept of the show is fine. And is, like, for family friendly.
I watched one of the clones. What was it called? Second Noah, I think. It was more about foster kids, like, they took in foster kids or whatever, and that's why they called it Second Noah, haha. But it was basically a similar, like, it had a Seventh Heaven vibe to it. Well, yeah.
But
I don't remember anything about
it. Here's the thing. I remember, like rewatching some of these episodes, and it's like the writing is so stilted and it's so bad. And it was like a B-movie version of, like, somebody was trying for, like, Amy Sherman-Palladino levels. Like, they were trying for, like, the Gilmore Girls range, but with a, like, family-friendly Christian vibe.
Yeah.
And it did not work. And I remember when Secret Life of the American Teenager, like, when it came out, like, I was just vaguely curious. It was like, oh, it's Molly Ringwald, and I love her, and I'm gonna watch a few minutes of this. And I started having, like, heart palpitations because I was like, there is something familiar here, and it's in a bad way, and I couldn't figure out what it is, and then I watched an entire episode of it, and it was like, I felt the need to shower, and then looked it up, and it was from the same people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that explains it.
Yeah.
And so there's very little from Seventh Heaven that was any good. And so, like, the acting is not great. The dialogue is terrible. And Jessica Biel was the first one to break away from the show.
Yeah.
And she broke away fast. She did not look back.
Good for her.
Yes. And so, but this was, like, right about that time that she bailed. And so she tried breaking into other stuff, and some of those things just were not good.
Yeah.
And it was like, I think it was like because she was stuck in that, you know, it was essentially like a, like almost, no, I was going to say it's almost, it was almost a soap opera, but I watched soap operas and those are better. But it was like, she was kind of stuck in this like wooden sort of like facade from the show.
Yeah.
And I was kind of blaming some of Tenley on that because this was right about that same time.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, okay, it's residual Seventh Heaven gunk. Like I'm, you know, it's the grim specter of that. That's, mm-hmm. that's Hank. But no, you've kind of hit the nail on that. Like she is just, Tenley's just a cardboard cutout.
She's a cardboard cutout with a bag of platitudes in her pocket. Like, because she has, because I mean, we do have the whole like, oh, I want to be an architect, but my daddy wants me to go work for an investment company. So I'm going to work for the investment company. And he's like, so go in debt and do what you want to do. Like,
yeah,
like her problem doesn't exist.
And the other thing, I like, it annoyed me. And then I understand, like, this movie is called Summer Catch, and it's supposed to be like the baseball movie, and it's supposed to essentially be his story. But like, we have all this talk of her, her loving our, like, we're told, not shown, that she has outside passions.
Yeah.
And so it, they ring hollow. Like, they feel, like, everything feels very flat.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, I don't know. There's just, ugh. Like, I did, like, the one thing. Okay, I'll tell you a positive thing. I will okay. go positive. When they first meet, and then the first couple of times they meet, Tenley chases him.
Yeah, I liked that flip.
For a 2001 movie, that was super rare.
Yeah.
In a Freddie Prinze Jr. movie, that was even more rare. I mean,
true.
I will say this, like, unabashedly, I am a Freddie Prinze Jr. person. Like, I love that guy. I truly enjoy watching him and stuff. I don't think he's a bad actor in this. I think the script is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of those movies he made in, like, the same time as he made, like, Head Over Heels and She's All That.
Mm-hmm.
She's All That.
Yeah, She's All That.
There's another one. I can't remember what it's called.
Boys and Girls.
Boys and Girls, yeah. Like there's, it's all in the same vein. They all feel really similar, even though they have very different stories.
Mm.
They all feel very similar.
Yeah, I remember, I think the title of it is Boys and Girls. It's him and Claire Forlani. And I hated that movie.
I get Boys and Girls and 40 Days and 40 Nights mixed up because their posters were real similar. And they,
no.
But 40 Days and 40 Nights with Josh Hartnett, I'm well aware of what that movie is. For some reason in my head, they get like crosswired, and so I can't ever remember which one is Freddie Prinze Jr. Like, I can't, it's just,
well,
I forget.
Yeah, I don't really remember much
I overwrote about one in my brain with the other, is what happened. I've never even seen either of them. Like, I've seen part of Boys and Girls, but that's
see,
it.
See, I remember watching Boys and Girls because, so a little bit of a story. My dad and I watched Meet Joe Black because we'd watch Meet Joe Black because it's a whole thing. Like, my dad and I loved movies and we watched movies together all the time. And so he had a thing for, it's a whole 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing because he had a thing for Brad Pitt because he loved the movie, because he loved the movie A River Runs Through It. He loved that movie because it's a Robert Redford movie, and he loved Robert Redford because of Jeremiah Johnson. So, like, it's a whole cascading thing.
The one I've seen part of is Down to You. I apologize.
Down to You.
With
okay.
Julia Stiles. Yeah, he did, because this is interesting, okay? This tells you why I'm saying they're all really similar. She's All That was 99. Mm-hmm. Down to You was 2000. Boys and Girls was 2000. Summer Catch was 2001. Head Over Heels was 2001.
Yeah.
Like, so they are, and those are, like, the Freddie Prinze Jr., like, that's the five. Mm-hmm. That's the five movies. Head Over Heels, I had on VHS. Like, I had that for a long time. And then after that, he did a lot of, he did Scooby-Doo. He did a lot of, started doing a lot of voice acting.
Yeah.
And I, like, that's the other thing. Like, just I mean, full disclosure, Mass Effect and Dragon Age are two of my favorite games, and his romance in Dragon Age Inquisition as the Iron Bull is one of the best things. Like, it's real uncomfortable if you're playing with someone else in the room. Because, interestingly and weirdly, it goes into, like, kink stuff.
Yeah,
like, it's really interesting, but not bad. Like, it doesn't get gross or anything. Like, it doesn't go too far.
Right.
If you're uncomfortable with it, it doesn't go too far. It's uncomfortable when you're playing it and your little sister walks in the room. That's when it's uncomfortable. But like that, and then his character in Mass Effect is James Vega, who is one of my favorite characters. I will get booed, and I don't care. Suck it. Because I love Vega. And I play as Femme Shepard, and come at me. I will fight you about Mass Effect all day. But the thing is, he is such a good voice actor. He doesn't get a lot of credit for it, but he's a huge, like, nerd.
Mm-hmm.
Like, huge video game guy. All this, like, he's a huge nerd. He did a voice on Kim Possible.
Right.
I mean, come on. Huge nerd. I love that aspect about him. So to look back at his, like, early, like, late 90s, early 2000s movies, it's so funny to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, Iron Bull, honey, you'll grow up. It's okay. You'll grow into it. It's all right. It's just weird to me. But yeah, like I said, full disclosure, I love him. And I also have a crush on Matthew Lillard, but that's okay.
Oh, Scream is one of my all-time favorite movies.
I didn't see it till college, do you remember?
No.
Yeah, you were up there when I watched him, because I rented all three Scream movies from Blockbuster or Buster's, which were the two movie rental places that existed. It's
basically like a Redbox, but an entire store.
Yeah. But I think I rented or maybe even bought them, because I own them now. So maybe I bought them as like a box set, because you had told me I had to watch those movies or we couldn't continue to be friends, basically.
I don't remember this.
And so I finally was like, I was by myself. I was doing laundry. I needed to do laundry and I wanted something to watch. So I like went and rented those. Fourth Floor of Foster. By myself for the first one.
I do remember
you
this.
You guys all came up.
Yes.
I watched it with you. And as soon as I saw Matthew Lillard, because this was 2000, after 04, because I graduated high school in 04.
So yeah, so this is probably 2004, 2005.
Yeah, so this was like way post Scooby-Doo, all that stuff. I loved Matthew Lillard.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I saw him and I went, oh God, he's the killer, isn't he? And Kia's just sitting on this couch trying not to bust out laughing. Because yeah, I nailed it in one. It's just one of those things. Like, it's weird. But yeah, so we both love Matthew Lillard in a lot of ways.
It's like, I
think he's funny on a lot of stuff. He's also a giant nerd. He plays D&D and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was just on The Stream of Many Eyes.
Yeah.
But, sorry, that's
in a game with Clint and Ashley and Sam and...
Yeah, with, like, a lot of Crowell people and the Adventure Zone people. So, yeah, it's really fun for me to look at, like, this now, looking back. Like, once again, we have the Christian Kane of it all. Because
mm-hmm.
he's, for those of you who don't know, he's on Leverage and he was on the show Librarians.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very different character than he is. He would have beat his own butt in this movie. Like, Elliot would have not taken that crap for 2 seconds.
There is a bit in this movie, like, where there's a bar brawl, and, like, yeah, he's kind of in the middle of it. And they cut away. And I was like, no. If, like, there's any of these actors who can handle, like, a bar brawl scene, it is Christian Kane.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because he's probably in a lot of them in real life from hearing him talking about, like, his wild teenage years.
Oh,
because
God.
I think he and Michael Rosenbaum were buddies?
That sounds right.
And, like, I know a lot about Rosenbaum's past because I've listened to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. I know way more about his past than I need to. So it amuses the crap out of me.
There's a whole group of, like, the CW boys from Texas.
That,
like,
all live together, yeah.
Yeah, who all ran around.
So, yeah, it's an interesting, like, it's just so interesting to look at where they are now. Like, mm-hmm. for me, that's the fun part of this movie.
Right.
Like, that is what brought my enjoyment into this movie. That and yelling at the actual baseball.
Well, and to, like, thinking of not so much Christian,
mm-hmm.
because, like, Angel, like, season one of Angel was, like, I don't think, like, it had, like, really hit its stride yet.
Agreed. It's still trying to figure out its
yes.
tone. Yeah.
And so, like,
it was more noir than it is later.
Yes, exactly. And so, but, like, when you think about, like, you know, Wilmer and Mark and Matthew and Freddie, and, you know, like, they are, like, A-list, like, mm-hmm. you know, young adult stars.
Yeah.
And, you know, like they're the people, like they're the names.
Well, that 70s show was still going on, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. It lasted for a while.
Was it even on yet?
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have to think. I was like, yeah, it was. I have to think for a second.
Yes, it absolutely was. Well,
because this movie was 17 years old, so I have to stop and go, wait, what was the thing back then?
Oh, and, like, and you add in, like, the heavy hitter, like, character actors of, like, mm-hmm. Bruce Davison and Fred Ward and Brian Dennehy. Yeah, Brian Dennehy's a big one.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, you add them... Like, I just, like, this...
Today, this would be two different Hallmark movies, though. That's the point I think we're trying to get to, is it just, like, it's got really good people in it, it just has a big, giant misstep of a movie. Like...
Yeah.
The script, like, I wonder how many rewrites happened while this was going on, because it just seemed like... Like, it just seemed like it didn't know what it wanted to do. Like you said, like, the dad's drinking isn't really an obstacle. It causes one drunken yell, and that's
it. Like, it causes his dad to say shitty things one time.
Yeah.
And that's something else, like, that gets in his head.
Yeah. Well, but, and the other thing is about the mom, because, mm-hmm. I was going to talk about this before, but, like, his mom is only mentioned at the very beginning and the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is that in his head if, like, you haven't shown us that that's still in his head at all? Like, show us, like, him going to his mom's grave, or, mm-hmm. like, I mean, just show us something that lets us know... you would still think about your parent. I'm not trying to say you wouldn't, but you haven't shown us that he has an unhealthy problem with his mom. You've said it twice. Actually, you didn't even say it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You more imply it at the end of the movie when the brothers finally talk about her.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that they talk about her. I like that scene. I just wish there had been more build up to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's my problem, is there's so many, like... We've talked about this in the last two movies. I'm going to do it again. There are good moments, but mm-hmm. a bad story.
Yes.
Like, there are some great moments, some real funny moments, some real cute moments. There's a moment where I like Jessica Biel in this movie.
What's that one?
When she's mowing the lawn. That part is hilarious. Yeah,
I do love that scene.
That part is a great scene. But yeah, there's just something about the way they tried to put it all together. And they miss some spots,
mm-hmm.
like, to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. But, like, it's hard to figure out, like, what to say about this movie, because, like, it's just baseball and awkward romance.
Yeah, I mean, like, the big thing that Ryan, which is Freddie Prinze Jr., struggles with is he can't close out a game.
Yeah.
That's his big thing. He always, like, starts getting worse toward the end of the game, which, spoiler alert, that's how it works.
Yeah.
When you pitch 9 innings, your arm gives out after a certain amount of time.
Yep.
And then Billy has problems hitting, which we talked about that already, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wrote. I was like, literally, Tenley is just a sayings generator now.
Yeah.
Because she keeps telling him things like, take big risks to get big rewards.
Mm-hmm.
What big reward? Take big risks. Allow yourself to succeed. Things like that, that I'm just sitting there going,
uh-huh.
Like, she literally says two or three things like that, and I just sat there and went, did you open a fortune cookie before you came out? Like, do you have, like, a sayings book in your back pocket that someone gave you for graduation and you just get all your life lessons from mm-hmm. it? Because none of it completely applies to his situation. It's just stuff she's heard other people say.
Yeah.
And so she's just such a, like, and yeah, we said she's a cardboard cutout, but, like, her character has no understanding of what's actually at stake for him.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two characters we haven't talked about. Augie and Pete.
Yeah.
Augie, for those of you who don't know, is played by, I didn't mention this, basically Gabriel, I would say Mann.
Gabriel Mann, yeah.
And I know him because I watched a couple seasons of Revenge.
Oh, right.
He's really great in Revenge. But I loved him in, like, I actually really liked him in this.
Oh, I did too.
Like, he's one of my favorite things in this movie. I could have done with more of him and less of a lot of other stuff.
To me, like, I feel like we could have completely excised Domo, which is Wilmer Valderrama. Like,
yes.
And because, like, I feel like, these characters who, like the stuff with, like, Mark Lucas's character, like, like, Dalrymple and Domo, they're outside baseball excursions. I don't care about as much because we're not given a reason to care about them on the field.
Yeah. I think that's the other thing I would enjoy more because we said we liked the camaraderie stuff. There's not enough camaraderie on this team for me. We have camaraderie between about three characters. We see him sitting around a table a lot.
Yeah.
And so we're supposed to devise that they have camaraderie. And there are a couple of parts where it really feels like it.
Yeah.
But then, like, it's clearly, like, you have Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard's characters, Billy and Ryan, going off and doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. And then Wilmer Valderrama is by himself. And Mark Lucas is, to use a horrible term, chubby chasing. Mm-hmm. So he's not around. It would have been more interesting to me to have, like, the team dynamic being pulling him away from Augie and Pete. Is it Pete or is it Sam? Pete, I think.
I figured it out.
Uh-huh.
Mark Lucas and Wilmer Valderrama's characters, they're the Nikki and Paolo of this team.
Oh! Oh, deep cut. That is a lost reference and a half, man.
Because, like, we have an entire season without them, suddenly they come in, and then, like, they're taking the spotlight away from stuff we really care about, and so we're just better off without them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it would have been, I think Domo could completely go.
I think
Lucas has some good moments with the boys.
I agree.
Like him if he were more included in the subset of Billy and Ryan.
Right.
Why do I have so much trouble remembering the name Ryan?
I don't know.
Billy and Ryan.
Well,
it would have been like because then he would have had two friends pulling him one way and two friends pulling him another. It would have been interesting. Like Billy, and that's the other thing they played off that she was going to be this huge distraction for him. Like, they played that up at the beginning. That wasn't the case.
It wasn't the case because she doesn't give two shits about baseball.
Yeah,
so it's not like...
I mean, she was a distraction.
She's not there pulling him away from baseball because she's encouraging him to do what... Like, to do
his own thing.
Yeah, to follow his dream. But, like, in turn, like, he's not really doing anything to chase after her, you know? But... I just thought about this. It makes sense that there is a closer relationship between Ryan and Billy because they're pitcher and catcher.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that.
Right. And so with making it, to me, it would have made more sense to flip the positions of Dalrymple and Dale, which is like Mark and like Mark mm-hmm. Lucas and, Christian Kane's character, because Christian Kane's playing the shortstop. He's an infielder. Mark Lucas is an outfielder.
Yeah.
And so we have, like, two little moments of Christian, like, actually being part of, like, the meeting on the mound.
Yeah.
But, like, he's not doing anything. He's not adding anything
also,
to it.
Also, when Billy gets his, what was it, two run, two, he gets a home run.
Yeah.
Christian Kane's character is one on the base. Like, he hugs him when he comes in. Like, yeah, you're right. It would have made way more sense to have... I don't know. And then, like, Christian's character gets... What's his name again?
It's Dale Robin.
Dale gets to make this great catch in the infield that I love.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite catches in the game. Like, I went, yeah! when it happened. And, like, it would have been more... Yeah, you're right. It would have been more fun for... See, I think that's the other thing with the redemptive arc. I'm like, it's the infield team, man. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted that bit.
Yeah.
Because, see, I don't actually like the Van Leemer story. Like, I don't like that section.
I completely understand why Van Leemer is there.
Oh, yeah. I just don't... It would have been, for me, just as much fun to have, like, anyone else in that role... Not necessarily after, but, like, instead of, like, it's just a really, really good pitcher in that role.
No,
like,
no. He has to be exactly what he is in this movie because he is 100%, like, a mirror flip of Ryan.
True.
Like, he is a guy with status. He is a guy who is good. He is a guy who is a closer.
That's true.
Like, he's a guy who has what it takes to make it through an entire game, and he is what we feel like Ryan is working toward. Van Leemer has to be what he is in this movie.
I meant less antagonistic. Like, maybe make fun of him or whatever. But, like, he goes out of his way. Because the other guy's a pitcher and he's threatened by him. And I understand that. But I don't know, there's just...
Right.
It's one of those things that... This is what I'm trying to say. It's another one of those movies that we have in the movie. Like, if we're going to focus on that, let's focus on that. We don't focus on that enough. If you want to focus on that, then we need to do more with it. Rather than, oh, he's this occasional foil that we have to put up with.
Yeah, and
I mean, it's like, this is going to sound really weird, it's going to be a really weird analogy. the show Power Rangers, you had Bulk and Skull, who were occasionally annoying.
Right.
They were the Bulk and Skull of this movie for me.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been interesting had we actually focused on what was going on, mm-hmm. and even what that guy was dealing with outside of the, like why he was there and stuff like that. But we don't. He's just a random...
He's not supposed to be.
To me, once again, more interesting movie. He's a flat character. So many of these characters are just flat. And it would have, let's pump up the villain. Let's make him either more of a villain or an understandable villain.
Van Lieber is not the villain. It's Ryan's own expectations that are the villain.
But that's hard to do in this kind of movie.
Oh, I completely get it. You need
a more deft hand than this movie
has. I understand. What is it they're talking about on, they always talk about on, Legends of Tomorrow, sometimes you need the scalpel and sometimes you need the chainsaw. Yeah. This movie is the chainsaw. They should have had a scalpel at times.
Also, one other random thing I just want to say it. Did Sam Adams sponsor this movie?
Probably.
Because it's mentioned, or they always are drinking Sam Adams. Always. I understand that the movie is set, they have a lot of Boston
New
College.
England. Yeah,
it's they have
New
a lot England. Of Boston, like stuff. So I get that, but I just, every time you turn around, there's Sam Adams. It was funny to me.
Product placement.
Honestly, when the little girl made a face toward the end of the movie, I thought she was going to show up dressed as Sam Adams. Not even a joke. Or a beer bottle. One of the two.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I assumed was going to happen.
I was like, there was a couple of other product placement things
that was for me the biggest one. Give me two Sam Adams, or let's talk. And he tosses down a Sam Adams coaster, and it gets a full second of screen time before he puts a beer on top of it.
Yeah,
It was just funny to me. That's all. It was just, I guess because I'm so used to seeing them in other things, it doesn't affect me as much. It's just this felt more blatant than I'm used to even seeing. That's all. But yeah, the other thing with Augie, going back to that, I loved the storyline of Ryan having to deal with deal with who his real support was.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's probably one of the most touching moments of the movie.
Oh, it's the best scene in the movie.
Because Ryan is going to quit because he's been benched. He's only going to pitch relief.
He's going to be riding the pine.
He's a relief pitcher for the rest of the season. So he's like, I'm just not going to show up anymore. And Augie goes off on him.
Yeah.
Augie just absolutely goes, why? I'm just going to wind up back here mowing yards for, I'm going to get a check, $70 for mowing the, mm-hmm. the Chatham public school. And Augie just lets him have it about how, people have been there for you.
Also, I want to, before I get into that, I want to point out the fact, his brother, Ryan's brother, tells him exactly what the point of this movie is.
Uh-huh.
Which is, everyone's behind you except you. You've got a bag full of talent and a head full of crap. And ever since mom died, you think the world owes you something. But you've got this gift and you just piss it away.
Yeah.
That's the entire point of this movie.
Yeah.
We have John C. McGinley is the Philly scout. And he comes, tells Ryan that they're interested. But then, but they need to see him pitch a little bit more. And
it's keep your head down, keep focused. You're doing good.
And they're going to need to see him pitch a little bit more, but he's just gotten,
told he's in the,
told that he's going to be, riding the pine. And so he wants to give up. And this is where we have this great speech from Augie, who tells him, I didn't miss one game, Ryan, not one game. I'm proud as hell you've done what you've done. When you hit the mound, I got all I could do to keep from crying, thinking about what all we've been through. None of us have missed a game. It's not about a paycheck. It's about having pride in what you do.
Yeah. Because it starts off, how it comes up is basically Ryan says he's never going to make it.
Yeah.
So what's the point anymore, basically? Mm-hmm. And the first thing he says before he gets into all the stuff he said is, you already made it.
Yeah.
Some of us here that think you already made it. Like, to come from where you have come from, which is a low-end, lower class
mm-hmm.
family that does landscaping, and to be playing with these people who are the best in the nation,
mm-hmm.
you've already made it.
Yeah.
Every time, because Ryan's mad he may have to take a job at Podunk somewhere and teach him and do pitching practice, and he's like, Augie's like, no, we'll follow you to Podunk.
Yeah.
And, like, it doesn't matter wherever you go, you've still got your family, mm-hmm. essentially. And I love that moment. Oh, yeah,
it's great.
That's one of the, like, great moments in this movie. There's, like I said, there's not that many. But for me, that's one of them.
Yeah, it's, I have to say, like, probably one of my favorite moments in this movie precedes this, and it's so dumb, but it still made me laugh so hard, and it goes to the fact, like, it's just Matthew Lillard selling it, because the reason that Ryan is so pissed off and the reason he's going to be riding the bench for the rest of the time and only going to be doing relief pitching is because in this game, the ump was against him.
Yeah.
And,
I wrote that down too, yeah.
It's so dumb, but it makes me laugh. It's like, he's just getting angrier and angrier, and, like, the ump is calling, like, these terrible calls, and so, like, they finally have a meeting on the mound. Oh, and also, like, he'd also recently just had a fight with Tenley.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole subplot, like, with a guy that she's, like, been with for years.
Yeah, that
her dad wants her to marry.
It goes nowhere,
and, like, the guy shows up, and Ryan goes to the house, and, like, the guy answers the door, basically.
But they have this whole conversation.
They have a whole conversation. Like, she didn't tell him because, like, I just wanted to do nothing this summer. Oh, and I'm the nothing you picked.
I literally wrote, so Ryan's the nothing.
Yeah, Ryan's the nothing. And
he has a sixth inning, and he starts self-destructing.
Yeah, he starts self-destructing in this game. And so they have a meeting on the mound, and you got your infield players. And I can't, like, the coach says something and everything.
What did you do to piss him off something like that?
Oh, no. Ryan says, is his wife know he's screwing us? That's what it is. And then, because he's a master of tension diffusion,
yeah.
Like, Billy jumps in with, you know, oh, it's my fault. I don't think he appreciates me farting in his face all night. The first one was accidental, but now I'm just trying to make him cry. It's a line that only Matthew Lillard could deliver with that much, like, for lack of a better word, like, integrity and, like, sell it. But it made me laugh. It was, like, my favorite moment in this movie.
And that's the thing I will say about the character of Billy in this movie. Billy is a tension diffuser. That's what he does. Yeah. At the beginning of the movie, when they're all at the bar, and Van Leemer makes a comment mm-hmm. about Ryan, and Ryan's ready to go, immediately Billy's like, hey, look, there's two hotties over here. You got to be my wingman.
Right.
And you can get out of here. And then, like, he does that throughout the movie. He tried because he's Ryan's catcher. So it's his job to make sure that Ryan can do his job. And, like, Ryan cracks a smile at the...
Oh, yeah, they all do.
Yeah. But for Ryan, too, at that moment...
Yeah.
For me, that was especially meaningful. But, yeah, because I've talked about this in other movies. I love characters who are protectors and they're there to fix things.
Mm-hmm.
And he is trying so hard to fix the situation. Yeah. It doesn't work, but he is there to bring the levity in that moment. I love that.
But yeah, I was after this whole game that goes terribly. And then we have, like, this moving speech from Augie. That's when we have Tenley mowing the lawn,
which is a cute moment.
It's one of the few movies, like, where you feel, like, actually feel some kind of, for me, I feel some kind of affection between, mm-hmm. between, Tenley and Ryan.
Yes.
And, like, because, like, it's a moment that feels genuine. Like, you know, he's been mowing the lawn in her family's summer home for the past six summers. But, you know, here she is, you know, she shows up as sort of a way of making amends, like, you know, push mowing his, you know, the yard at his dad's house.
And then they have, like, cute flirt fight running around.
Oh, yeah.
And that's also the moment his dad looks out the window and goes, all right, she's beginning to grow on me.
Yeah.
She's out there mowing the yard. And so dad's like, all right, I kind of approve of this.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know,
go ahead. This is a little later in the movie, so I didn't want to jump too far. I also thought there was some really weird camera work in this movie, by the way. I didn't bring that up earlier. But, like, that particular scene, like, as much as I enjoy that scene, there's, like, a couple of weird, like, I don't understand why the camera is circling them at a couple of different moments.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, wow, that was jarring and unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it would have done better to do a steady cam moment there, but okay, whatever. Not that I know anything about filmmaking, but... It just didn't do much for me there. I was like, mm-hmm. this is weird. We're missing half of your sentence behind his head. Like, why are we doing this?
Yeah, I wanted to point out, like, for the purposes of the characters, it is kind of, like, and actually a pretty big moment when Ryan's dad says, you know, oh, she's starting to grow on me, like, I like this girl. That's because when his dad was a mean drunk, he told Ryan that that Tenley was just some shore road princess trying to get daddy's attention by screwing the lawn boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, like, to have, he's like, yeah, okay, she's all right.
She's out there willing to try.
Yeah. And we also get, you know, there's a party at Tenley's house. Like, her dad insists that Ryan come. We get the stereotypical, like, you know, dad telling off the boyfriend from the wrong
side. The only thing he doesn't do is pull out a checkbook.
Oh, yeah. In my head, that's how I remembered it going.
No, instead he threatens the dad's job and says, I'll make sure your dad doesn't work anymore, basically.
Yeah.
And Ryan pulls a Ryan and gets mad about it and storms out. Mm-hmm. Understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to his dad and tells his dad what's going on. And then he's having a fight with Tenley. They're discussing their future the next night.
Yeah.
And clearly he's trying to break up with her because he's like, you're going to go and I need to go. Like,
yeah.
We can't be together unless you want to actually cut from dad. And that's when he tells her, you know, you could go into debt if you really wanted to do this thing. Like, you don't really want to do this thing.
He tells her, like, if you want to continue to study architecture, like, go back to school and get loans. And she's like, oh, you just don't understand.
Daddy won't pay for it. Shouldn't say daddy, but he's like, so go into debt if it's something you really believe in and really want to
do. Yeah, and so it's like, basically, like, he's doing the man thing. It's like he's offering solutions and she's not wanting to hear them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's like, well, like, you know, my dad, you know, it's because my dad wants me to go do this, like, to go to this investment firm in San Francisco and work for my uncle. He's like, okay, so do that. And she's like, well, would you settle for cutting grass even though, like, you want to play ball? And he's like, no. Okay, so get loans and go to architecture school. And she's like, but I can't. And,
well, he's also trying to fill her out to see if what she feels for him is real.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to feel that out, like, subtly.
Yeah.
And also, he's going, you know, if this isn't going to go anywhere, I should break up with her for her own good and for my dad.
Yeah.
So he ultimately, basically, is, like, in the process of breaking up with her when the fire breaks out.
Yeah,
he rescues Van Lemer and Van Lemer's girl from
Dale and Van Lemer have broken into the press box with a couple of girls. And Van Lemer
is an idiot. He lights a book of matches and then doesn't actually stomp it out.
No, as he's stomping it out, he knocks it off the steps into a box of programs.
Like, speaking, like, you don't, I don't care. Oh, man, anyway.
A dumb college boy, that's
it. I guess.
But so
they lock the door, so they get locked in. So, hero moment, sort of, not really. He still gets kind of in trouble. Even though he didn't do anything wrong.
Well, no, I understand. He doesn't get in trouble. It's the coach is like...
Mad at the whole team, yeah.
The coach is giving the entire team a dressing down because two of its players did something really stupid.
And those two players are now gone.
Which,
yeah he does the right thing.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, when people were late or like people just didn't show up to softball practice... My dad made the rest of us run laps so that we would learn the lesson that they obviously didn't. Mm. So it's like, it's completely understandable why he's yelling.
Yeah.
Why he's yelling at the rest of the team, like,
oh, yeah.
for being stupid.
And the whole reason, I mean, plot-wise, Van Lemer had to go because we have to get Ryan back in the game. Which is why I said at the beginning, I think an injury would have been just as interesting and I could have kept Christian Kane on my screen. So... But anyway.
But even then, like...
We don't even know who takes over for shortstop, which kind of cracked me up. Like, it was this big deal. Their best shortstop was gone. But then their shortstop's there. Like, because there wasn't that many guys on the team. It would see, this was where you could have had, like, Domo's the shortstop. Like, he now can go and do it.
I literally cannot remember, like, what Domo, like, me what either. His position is in on the field. But, like...
Also, before... Right after the fire, Tinley's dad gets onto her for embarrassing the family because she and Ryan are on the front page of the paper looking at the fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not doing anything. They're just being checked out. They're making sure everybody's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, how dare you bring your embarrassment? Your family's shame is now everyone's shame.
It did crack me up that, like, they're sitting on, like, the back of a fire truck or, like, back of an ambulance or something like that. I don't remember which. But, like, they've got, like, the whole, like, blanket around her kind of deal. And I'm like, she was nowhere near it. What is happening?
I
know, right?
I thought that, too. But maybe it was cold outside. But... go closer to the fire. but yeah, so he's all mad at her and stuff. And she goes, it's okay. I'm going to, what is it, San Francisco?
Yeah. San Diego. San Francisco.
Because he wants me to, essentially.
You win.
Yeah, he doesn't want me, so I'll go to San Francisco. And then,
yeah,
the next scene is another one I really like, though. Because it's where Sean Dunn, which is Ryan's dad, mm-hmm. shows up. And basically...
and gives a final bill to Tinley's dad.
And it's like, I won't be doing your lawn anymore or winterizing your house. And even Dunn at that... No, not Dunn. Even Tinley's dad at that moment is like, oh, I shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah. He just gets mad and wads up the bill and throws it in his trunk. Yeah.
But you can see that he's... like, there's this like... there's a moment in his face that he's like,
well,
I pushed that a little too far.
What Ryan's dad tells him is, like, you know, pride isn't something that's only exclusive to, you know, to people here on Shore Drive.
Yeah. But he kind of makes this face that makes me think he doesn't really like the other option for mowing his lawn. But because it's just like that, oh, kind of shouldn't have done that. It was more of a bluff than an actual, like, threat. Which, it just cracked me up, because that's what I felt like. And once again, it's like, I wish that had actually, like, been a thing. That he was bluffing all along just to get rid of this kid. But I liked that moment where mm-hmm. Sean stands up for himself. Like, mm-hmm. Sean is like, no, we're not doing this. You're not using me. Because I've seen so many movies where that happens, where the kid is blackmailed, or the person is blackmailed in something to keep their parent from mm-hmm. losing something important to them. And so I liked this moment with the dad going, yeah, no, you can shove this job where the sun don't shine, as my son basically said. But yeah, so I liked that moment. But yeah, then we get like a final, like another thing with Tenley, where we get more platitudes, because she sees him going out of the bar the night before the game.
Yeah,
and she's gonna fly out that night.
She tells him, "Let yourself be great tomorrow night."
Yeah, let yourself be great. Because oh god, anyway, and then so she stops. Like he is pitching, and it is a no hitter.
We got a no hitter going.
I don't have any more notes because I was just getting more frustrated with the movie. But so the no hitter's going, and Tenley's like, "I'm gonna stop," but she's getting ready to fly out. She's like, "I have to stop by the field first." Did she think he was gonna be there to say goodbye? He's busy. So the little sister's like, "He's got a no hitter going." What's a no-hitter? What's it sound like? Like, what's an... I don't... Even before I knew baseball, I understood the words no-hitter. Like, how dumb do you have to be to not understand that when the pitcher throws the ball in, the no-hitting is good? It just didn't make sense. I was like, oh, God, you're so stupid. Like, that's all I could think.
I don't think of it as, like, her being stupid. It's just, to me, it's not something she ever thinks about.
I guess, but it's just... It's all there in the name. What's a no-hitter? It's where they're having, like, but it's just there in the name. Like, what bothered me more than anything else.
I get that it's in the name, but at the same time, it's like, if
she had responded with something like, is that good? Or is that normal? Or, like, that would have been great. Like, I'd have been fine with that.
That's something that it's one of those things that I chalk up to the dumbness of the writer than the character.
That's fair.
It's like, I didn't hold that against her as a character.
That's fair. But then he's in the middle of he's got two outs left in the no-hitter, and he realizes he loves Tenley. And his dad told him earlier in the movie that if you find a good woman, that's all it takes, mm-hmm. essentially. Like, a good woman, good life.
Yeah.
And so he calls in at the infield, and he's like, I've got to go after her. I've got to go after her. I'm going to leave the game that could literally set me for life to go after someone that will be there when the game is over.
Like, Brubaker says it all. Like, he, you know, Ryan calls time, and, like, you know, Billy runs up, and he's like, yeah, Ryan, man, like, what's going on? You okay? And he's like, I love her. Great. I love her, too. Now, what do you say? Like, we finished this thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, to me,
because it's not like she's gonna fade away from existence when she flattens. Maybe she will, but when she crosses the line, maybe this is Storybrooke. She crosses the town line and that's it. But
you saying that is like actually, yeah. Like there's so little to Tenley that I'm like, I forget she exists when she's not on screen.
Yep. So he jumps, he has Augie start the car and he jumps in the car with Augie and they drive to the airport. Okay, it's a private plane, but they drive to the airport and somehow get on the tarmac. And okay. It's pre-9/11, so I'm giving it a break.
It's pre-9/11, and also, were you ever up at the airport by campus?
That's fair.
because I went up there a couple of times on, for stories and stuff.
I've been up there before.
So, it's not that difficult.
But yeah, so they drive up to the thing as she is getting ready to get on the plane, and he's like, I love her. I mean you. I love you. And I don't want you to go. I don't want to go. Kissy, kissy, kissy.
And at this point, there is so many overlapping things happening that, like, it's hard to discern any one thing that's going on. Because, like, you get, in runs, you know, Dad and the Philly Scout,
John C. McGinley.
Oh, love that man so much.
Me too.
But it's like you get that there's haggling over, like, they're offering him
A thing on a 1A team that the Phillies
it's
the Phillies pull from
the Muck Dogs, yeah.
And 50,000, 75,000. That'll do it.
So Dad and the Scout are haggling, and like Ryan and Tinley are just kind of standing there. And then
Ryan takes the job without looking at any other offers. You just pitched basically a no hitter. Go look at your other offers.
Yeah, and
I don't care that much, but still.
Yeah, and then Augie and Pete start hooping and hollering, and like they're like all of a sudden there is so much happening here. But like,
and then we get like the epilogue.
Yeah,
they kiss. There's no weird voiceover telling us what's going on.
Yeah.
And so then, like, the credits start, and we see him playing for the Phillies, getting called up to play for the Phillies, and everybody's at Brothers Bar, except for Jessica Biel. Her character is not seen again.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes up and pitches to Ken Griffey.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah. Ken Griffey Jr. And Griffey, first pitch, Griffey gets a home run off of him. Okay, that's a bad thing. Like, I mean, yeah, it's Ken Griffey Jr., so it's fine. Like,
but it's...
It's in the big game, so it's...
Well, it's not that. It's the lesson of, like, because the announcer says, it's like, oh, well, you're in the big leagues now, done.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the point.
Welcome to the game, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, party or yeah, like, what, like, welcome to the big leagues. It's like, pointing out, like, okay, he's here, he made it, but he still has work to do. Like, that's the point.
But, yeah, so that's why the movie ends, is them all, like, they're all, like, watching him from the bar, from his brother's bar, which is cool. I don't have a problem with that. It's just, oh man, there's so much of this movie that I would cut out. Like, it's an hour and 43 minutes. I literally finished that one. Oh my God, how long was that? Was it like 2.5 hours? It felt like 2.5 hours. But, like I said, you cut the fat girl stuff, cut the Virgin Valderrama storylines, cut a few of the sex jokes, because geez Louise, we got enough of them. Which is a thing for that era of film.
Yeah, because this was, like, the...
I just get tired of them.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Pretty much, like, from, like the late mm-hmm. 80s through the early 2000s, there was the, I heard Tom Hanks referred to it once as, like, you know, the guy who can't get laid movies.
Yeah.
And so they had a lot of those kind of, like... crude sex talking,
yeah.
You know, stereotypical characters, and for a movie that is 98% dude,
yeah,
it's what's gonna happen.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, if you cut some of those things, this would have been a much more streamlined and put together movie. Because sometimes when the jokes are thrown in, they're thrown in at weird times. That's like, it's more like, okay, so we're at this really romantic thing with Tinley and him. Well, romantic.
But then again, do you pay attention to our D&D sessions?
It's fair. I just more meant like, but a D&D session isn't a movie. It's not put together that way. I don't know. There's just something jarring about some of the way that things are put together in this movie.
I agree. But like, again, it's a movie like written and directed by dudes. Like, I don't know, like, who the target audience is for this movie, because it's mostly a baseball movie with dudes.
It's so the guys can have something to watch when they take a girl to the movies. It's got a love story for the girls. It's got the baseball for the boys. That's what it is.
Like, yeah, it's like, it's just, this movie's a mess. Like, there are parts of it that I enjoy.
So here's the question. Do they stay together?
Fuck no.
You're right, because she stops existing the minute she leaves town. But anyway, she just turns into pixie dust and floats away.
So what do you rate this movie?
1.5.
Same.
I almost went 1. Like, 1 was in the running for most of this movie, but there's a couple of things that I let it go to 1.5.
Last night, after I watched it, I was giving it a generous 2, maybe 2.5. But all of that was strictly due to Matthew Lillard and Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh, yeah. And, like, and that's fair.
Their chemistry carries this movie.
That and the scene with Augie is what bumped it up to 1.5 for me.
Yeah.
And the fact that they cast Christian Kane in any role whatsoever gives them a little slight bump.
Yeah. If you haven't guessed, Christian Kane is one of those actors who, like, I don't know so much about you, but, like, I have pretty much, like, anything that he's ever been in, I've at least attempted to watch it at some point.
There are a couple things I won't, but other than, cause I think he's done, like, some scarier things, and I don't do scary.
I watched the terrible, like, Donner, like Donner Pass movie.
Yeah, I haven't watched that one.
I watched, yeah, he was in, like, the Snowshoe Group, like, he died, like, 5 minutes into the movie.
I'm glad I never didn't try.
Yeah. Like, Into the West, I watched because I knew he was in it.
My dad had that, so I saw that before I knew who he was.
Her Minor Thing, I got because I got it because it was him and Michael Weatherly.
That's on our list sometimes.
It is on our list. It's not going to hold up. I know it's not.
No, but I'm going to enjoy Michael Weatherly. I get to look at Michael Weatherly and Christian Kane for a certain amount of time. So
I went back and bought Secondhand Lions because I realized he's the young Robert Duvall.
Travis Willingham's in it too. So
I know. To own it. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that until I didn't realize the it. Thing.
Anyway, yeah, hearing that, I'm like, I've got to go back and watch it so that I can find
who he's a thug. I know exactly who he is.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. He's in the bar because the story of Robert Duvall punching him in the face he was a stuntman.
He gets punched by Robert Duvall. Yep.
That's right. I've forgotten.
But yeah, so I mean, and like Christian Kane plays young Robert Duvall.
Yes.
In Secondhand Lions. He plays like one of my favorite, like Elliot and Leverage, which that is my like happy show. Like we aren't going to talk about that show for a long time because I don't just ship one couple on that show. I love everyone on that show. But
that polyamory situation.
That show is like the show that I can put in and just sit here and just relax. Like, I don't need anything else going on. I can just watch those people be those people, and it makes me happy.
Yeah.
And same thing for The Librarians, for the most part. I haven't tried rewatching it yet since it got canceled, but there's just something about watching those shows, like Leverage especially, and Christian Kane's character in it is just such a, like, great person.
There are so many actors in this movie who, like, opposite, like, of the younger cast, who, like, I've sought out movies to watch specifically because they're in them, you know, or parts in animated shows.
Yeah. They're worth more than, the cast is worth more than this movie, like, to be fair.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
This cast is not worth this movie.
Yeah. I feel like even by 2001 standards, it wasn't a good movie.
I don't think it was. I think it bombed pretty hard.
It probably did.
Because the next one we did was Head Over Heels, and I don't think it did very well either, but I like that movie. I liked. Haven't watched it in a long time.
I don't remember that one.
He's an undercover FBI agent, and across the window, like, it's a rear window situation, because the girls across the window is a group of models and another girl that lives in the apartment, and the other girl sees him, what she thinks is murder someone, and he's actually faked this woman's death because he's an undercover FBI agent.
Yeah, I remember that being a thing. I know I never watched it.
We had it on VHS.
No, we watched... No, like,
and She's All That is, like, one of the classic for our age rom-coms.
Yeah, my dad and I watched Boys and Girls because, like, what I was saying earlier was that, you know, it was a cascading thing, and after my dad saw, Meet Joe Black, he fell in love with Claire Forlani as an actress, and so we started, like, watching movies that had her in it. And it happened, like, he saw her on a box cover, and he was like, oh, who's this guy? Like, oh, he's, you know, in all of these things, like, he's pretty good. Okay, well, let's watch it. I'm very much like my dad in that. I don't care who, like, if there's somebody in a movie, I don't care what type of movie it is. I'm going to try to watch it. And so my dad would watch rom-coms just if there was somebody he liked in them. And so we rented it, and it was terrible. And he's like, we're never watching this again. I don't remember a thing about Boys and Girls. I just remember it was terrible. But they're, like, it's a great cast.
Yeah, the cast is worth more than the sum of this movie,
for sure. Yeah, absolutely. But I don't have anything else to add.
Me neither.
Like, it's a terrible movie.
Oh, it's so bad.
Don't waste your time.
We wasted our time, so you didn't have to.
Exactly. But yeah, that'll get it for this episode of Couch Buddies. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye. If you enjoyed this episode of Couch Buddies, why not leave us a rating and review over on iTunes? And while you're at it, don't forget to hit the subscribe button on your podcast app so you never miss an episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us by searching on social media. We're Couch Buddies Pod on Twitter, on Tumblr at couchbuddies.tumblr.com, and you can email us at couchbuddiespod@gmail.com.